Well, today we're going to take a little bit of a pause. It's important to take time out to reflect on where you've been and where it is you think you're going. It's especially important that we take that individual pause to really reflect and think about our priorities, our values, and our purpose. In today's episode, we're going to dive in and do just that.
You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Welcome, everyone. This is another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. I am your host, Doug Thorpe, and today I've got with me Mr. Mike Hines. We think we're going to have a really good discussion today about some thought-provoking ideas and ways to kind of set your heart and mind on the purpose that you might be pursuing and really get kind of the nitty-gritty of why it is you do what you do with your business, your work, and even with your life. So, Mike, first let me say welcome. Happy to have you on the show.
Thanks, Doug. It's a real honor and pleasure to be here. Really enjoyed talking so far and looking forward to where we take this today.
Yeah, I agree. We had quite a warm-up discussion, and as often happens, I almost wish I hit the record button when we just start doing the kind of meet-greet interview. It was a good one, but we'll replicate parts of that and get into some other things too. So, Mike, tell everybody first a little bit about your own journey. How is it you've kind of gotten to where you are right now?
Well, you know, I've had a kind of a very fortunate career in some ways. I've gotten a ton of experience. I think I always wanted to be independently employed. And so, you know, my first big job was teaching psychology at in a psychology lab, University of Toronto. Did that for a year as a sabbatical replacement. I've also worked as a butcher. I worked in mortgages in the bank. And then going right into what we called the Great Recession, I was at a subprime mortgage lender in a small brokerage, and you know, that kind of completely adjusted my career. I had the opportunity to reassess my life and where I was at that point. And next thing you know, I got myself on a plane, went out to California, picked up, you know, my old psychology background, psychotherapy training, and learned to do visionary craniosacral work with a guy by the name of Hugh Milne. And that really put me seriously on the path of helping others, and started to get me much more aligned with what I was on this planet to do. And as we talked a little more, I found out, oh, wow, you led 4,000 or 5,000 people through that process right around the same time. And I'm actively involved in that nowadays. I mean, with this great resignation, great reset, great reshuffle, you just pick any R word you want. And, you know, people are doing a reassessment. And it's serious business. You know, our lives are in the balance, our future, our happiness. And if we're not in line, or, you know, in some of the conversation we had earlier, what if you never had that sense of purpose, that sense of belonging? Like, what if as a child you didn't get it, the message that, hey, I'm a child of God and I belong here and I am loved and cared for? Well, we start to pick that up as adults. And I know that's work that you do, and somewhere, you know, it's in behind the scenes. People come to me for executive coaching, but next thing you know, we're asking these deep questions. And when we really get our feet put down on the ground, that's when, you know, our steps are steady, our stance is strong, comes through in our tone of voice and our eye contact. And people around us start to take notice, and our leadership decisions, or sometimes our job hunt, the interviews come through.
Yeah, you're so right. And what Mike's alluding to is, of course, the big recession that happened in 2008 when the unemployment figures went into the double digits. He and I both shared a common bond there in that we were working in mortgage finance when the crash hit. And for those of you that don't recall, one of the biggest segments of the industry, or the economy, I should say, that went down in 2008 was housing, and the mortgage finance world, and things came to a screeching halt for a period there. I know in my business, I had 200 mortgage banks that were my client companies for the service company I owned, and I told the story over a 45-day period. We lost 75% of our volume. And when you have a large operation going and you take that kind of a volume hit across the board, I mean, it was top to bottom. There was no differentiator. The whole industry had come to its knees. It does kind of send you on a search. And fast forward, as you mentioned, I started a nonprofit to help job seekers. And one of the big revelations for me, even running the organization, was the realization that people needed to reconnect with purpose.
Yeah.
Too often people would show up for the first time at one of our meetings, and I would ask them, this is what I learned to do. I'd look at somebody and say, tell me something about yourself. And inevitably they would go into a job title or job description. I'm an electrical engineer. I'm a finance service officer. I'm blah, blah, blah. And I would shake my head and go, no, you didn't answer the question. I don't care what you do. Tell me about you. And people struggled with that. People could not answer that question.
Yeah. And, you know, we start to ask those questions and you kind of ask that second question, that follow-up question, you start to hear things, well, like I'm a father or I'm a mother, or, you know, I'm an immigrant, or I'm a, you know, here for however many generations. And it gets more and more personal. You know, you sort of start to peel away the layers. And sometimes you get like the real treasures, like what's absolutely brings this person joy. And sometimes, especially these days, it's like, hey, here's what's given me heartache. Because there's always a lot of that. I mean, we've got a little more of it with everything going on in the world right now. But there's also a lot more opportunity.
It does really seem that because of the sort of unavoidable lockdown and everybody being sent home from the workplace, that so many of our employees did a reset. Whether it was voluntary or involuntary, they went through the process of saying, hey, what is my life right now? What am I doing? Where am I going? Why am I here? What should I be doing? And as they processed that, they came up with a different answer for what their work ought to be about.
Yeah. And that's given, you know, the leaders that I'm talking to some real challenges, especially, you know, with the ones who are, you know, basically their best employees could do the work of two or three people. If they're coming up with some kind of answer that's other than, you know, doing what I used to do, we got to be in dialogue with them. And, you know, what kind of love about this is that, you know, it is an opportunity for these leaders to lift people up. So you can kind of go into this thing of like, oh man, I kept the lights on for these people. Now they're talking about leaving or going for higher pay elsewhere, or not coming back to work. And it can get into you, it can get inside your head and say, wow, you know, like I put my faith in them. Where's the loyalty? It turns into a demand. Or you can take a second and say, okay, this person's telling me something really important about what's going on with them. I mean, they may have lost loved ones, or they may have elderly people they got to care for. They may not have childcare anymore because school's on and off, or heaven knows, right? But they're telling you something really important. And the people that are getting this right in leadership are having that conversation, no matter how difficult. And they're saying, I'm going to continue to invest in you, and you're going to continue to invest in me, and we can have a win-win. Like those of us that really have had the good fortune to have a job that we absolutely love doing, recognize how important that is for the psyche. Like we know what that structure provides, and we know that, wow, I've made a difference in a life or lives. I've kind of increased my wealth, but not everybody's had that. And so we can start to have some of these conversations of, hey, work can be something really good for you. Work can be really healing. But as leaders, we can't just kind of, I don't know, get away with do as I say, when I say it. I mean, that stuff's gone.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a demand for a different style of leadership. And there will be those, you know, longstanding people in positions of authority that can't make the change. And I've already seen it in a couple of areas where, you know, 30-year-old veterans of an industry are saying, you know what, forget it. I hear what's going on. I see what people are talking about. I'm not ready and able to make that leap. I'm going to go ahead and take my chips and go home. And it's sad in that regard. But I think the companies that are really emerging stronger out of this are the ones where the leadership has taken that very open-minded view and said, okay, I get it. I'll hear what you're saying, talking to the employees. I'll hear what you're saying, and I am willing to have the dialogue. I am willing to have the discussion and ultimately make whatever changes make sense for the good of the business.
Yeah. And I mean, it is on the employees to bring in a business case. I mean, we've had a lot of that kind of stuff go around the internet and kind of popular media where, you know, I'm quitting that jerk boss or all those kinds of things. And like, I think we're having another wave or a third wave of that, because you're now seeing people talking about like, should I rehire the same employee? They've gone to another workplace. They found out, hey, this job's terrible too. I didn't think about it, but somebody had to quit this job for it to be an opening for me to, you know, for me to have a job to apply to. And it's worse than where I came from. Right. And so like, there is some of this, this kind of balancing out that's happening. You know, I mean, we do have to do work. It requires effort by definition, and then we're compensated for it. So it does require from the employee side to, you know, to manage themselves and kind of make sure they're being a contributor in the business, right? We're all in it for a reason.
I think you raise a great question, and I definitely had leadership teams ask me this, you know, yeah, but what about the employee's obligation? What should the employee be doing in the face of all this? And I think the fair answer is there's definitely some employee accountability that has to be on the table. It can't be just so incredibly one-sided that the employee is calling 100% of the shots, because guess what? The average employee doesn't know everything that needs to be known about having the business be a success. No. So they've got to show up and do their part and somehow build the trust with leadership that they are making decisions that are going the right direction. And I know that's a big hypothetical for me to lay out there, because that's exactly where some company owners and leaders are failing. They're not building the trust. They're not allowing those things to happen. So employees are disgruntled and leave to go elsewhere.
And some of this is generational. I mean, you brought up a 30-year-old, and it gets even more so as you go down to the 25-year-old. They, you know, their number one driver is not necessarily dollars. And I think initially in this Great Recession, there was like this kind of, let's just throw some money at the problem and we'll get new people or we'll keep the old people. And it still didn't kind of stem the tide. And so leaders are really saying like, what on earth do I do? And it is about having that conversation with your employees, like, hey, what's most important to you? What actually matters? And, you know, I love in your work, it's not necessarily the work-life balance. It's like work-life harmony. As we go to, you know, first we had kind of enforced work from home, and now we're looking at all these kind of hybrid models or work from anywhere models. Like our work world may be permanently changed, not every industry, but for a lot of people. And you got to know what drives your people. Why are they there? And really, you don't want it to be just over a paycheck. Like, you want to have them have some skin in the game, and you need to know who you've got at the table, who you've hired in the first place. And that's just a bit more time, and it's upfront time. You need to be having some of these conversations right up front. Don't wait till a year later and say, you know, so far that you had a good year.
Right.
You know, and it's a different style, but that accountability has got to be more ongoing.
Yeah, having that open dialogue, I think, is so critical. And you're right. I've shifted in my own thinking and in my writing about the work-life balance conundrum that was out there for a long time. I think the more appropriate word nowadays is harmony. Mm-hmm. Finding the connection where both elements of our being are working in harmony with each other, not contending for time, which I think is what the work-life balance model suggested and got everybody kind of skewed off on one side, thinking about the time element of everything. And while time is very vital, we're all, you know, strapped in that regard, how much time we've got. It's the dynamic of how you blend those things together that make for better success.
Absolutely. And it is a different answer. I know I was talking to a young person the other day who just kind of said, my dad's way of doing this is he outsourced the family and devoted his entire life. He never worked less than 60 hours a week. And I want no part of that. And, you know, there's somebody who's, I guess, 28 years old, entering the workforce, has his, you know, second job now, but this one's solid. He's not looking for, hey, what's the corporate ladder hold for me and how many hours can I put in to get there? And so that's a different kind of mindset that we've got to deal with. And it's weird because, you know, when we look at a customer acquisition model, you know, when we build out an advertising campaign, we have it figured out, like, what are our points of contact so that this person begins to know, like, and trust us? We actually kind of have to use that same model of building a funnel for our own employees now so that people come closer and closer and closer to us and become more and more engaged so that over time, we're actually leading to them. And yeah. I mean, it's from sports, right? You know, we've got our draft and then we've got our minor leagues and then we've got our major leagues and we kind of get them more involved in the organization. We've got our eye on the people we want to have around.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And it is that mechanism for developing that bond that is going to be so critically important. And I tell you what, I think we'll take that as our theme as we go into break here. We'll come back in the second half. We'll talk about this effort that employers can do to build the right bond or actually build a environment of trust, which is another one of my favorite topics. But we'll be right back after this break.
Business is all about solving complex problems as fast as you can create them. Become the best problem solver by leading others to greatness too. And the first step is going to DougThorpe.com. Doug Thorpe is known globally for coaching entrepreneurs and business leaders, improving their performance and the work output of everyone surrounding them. You can find health, wealth, and happiness by learning to lead others to health, wealth, and happiness. Go to DougThorpe.com now and order Doug's books or hire him to coach your managers. That's Doug, T-H-O-R-P-E.com.
Hello again, everyone. We're back. And today I'm talking with Mike Hines. Mike and I have been talking about this mind shift to help the new normal, I guess we can call it, or the new work environment that everybody's facing. And what we talked about in the first half, you know, it's really driven by this idea of doing some kind of reset. We do it at a personal level when we question what it is we've been doing, where we've been going, and what we think we're about. And it's clear that the workforce in the modern business world at large has done a reset. So as a company owner or a leader, the question becomes, how do you engage those folks? And what are your choices? What are your next steps you need to be thinking about to attract the right talent, retain the right talent, and motivate the workforce to do what you've got to do? And that's a huge, tall order. So, Mike, I'll put it on you. How do you fix that?
Boy, if I had that right answer, I'd be on the cover of Forbes instead of trying to get it. Amen. But I can tell you, you know, when things are going right, you can kind of there are some commonalities, and, you know, you and I kind of connecting on, hey, what happened back in 2008, 2009, 2010, where did your life go? That's actually valuable information. So what's kind of funny as human beings is our brains are always kind of operating on shortcuts, right? Like that thing up in between our ears uses a lot of energy. And so we often don't like to use it. And we go to shortcuts or heuristics, as they call it. When we're in a time like this, we kind of want to do that consciously. So there's a lot of pressure. We don't want to collapse into like our lowest common denominator state. We actually want to rise to meet the pressure. As leaders, it's even more important that the people around us see us and feel us as having that kind of grace or calm, assessing the situation for what it really is, setting a path or having a vision, having a purpose. You know, it can be a much more short-term thing, but a goal that's very clear and definable, and doing it calmly. And that comes across in our tone of voice, in our patterning. That comes across in what time of day we're sending our emails. People can tell if we're kind of losing it or if we're going to be the one who is kind of like that light into safe harbor. So that's a big mouthful. Each and every person is going to have a very individual way of leading. And each and every company in this industry, even sometimes, you know, groups or teams have to handle this differently. But it is, you know, like we keep going back and forth, you know, trust, kind connection, having a deep kind of knowing of, you know, where your heart's at. And a piece that we, you know, I was kind of alluding to and didn't quite make the point of why we need that, you know, 2008 reset recession. It's like, oh, you and I both lived through that. And we both lived through harder times than that. And we got valuable life lessons.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the piece we got to remember in a time like this, when it's kind of chaos, right? And some people are freaking out. It's like, okay, this is hard, but I know how to do hard things. And here's the first piece I need to put in place. And here's the second piece. And here's the third piece. You know, what I go around telling people is, hey, the first piece you got to put in place is your connection with yourself.
Yeah.
And then to your teammates and then to your kind of, you know, people who are your reports.
I agree with you, Mike. And I do that with virtually all of my coaching clients. At some point, I challenge them to really think about what their sense of self is. And I don't mean that in an egotistical way, but in a grounding, in a foundational sort of way. You know, what are the principles and values and purposes that might make up your meaning of who and what you think you are? And I'm always drawn to the famous quote from Mark Twain. He said, you know, two important days in a man's life, the day he was born and the day he figured out why. And a lot of people go through and spend many years trying to figure out that why question and never quite get there. They get busy doing work, building a family, earning a paycheck, maybe even building a brand, but never really deal with that bigger question of why are you doing all that? What's it for?
And that's kind of one of the themes I like to get at in my book and overall is, hey, what is this purpose? I kind of go to mythology and say, you know what, you've got a long arc story playing out. Like there's something that's deeply connected to your purpose. Sometimes you see it in repeated patterns, relationships fall apart or jobs do, or, you know, some people say, oh, I'm on a lucky streak, and they do that every 3 years or so. Like there are these kind of themes and patterns, and until we kind of really take that step back and put it all together, it's as if we're just kind of at the mercy of the winds and without a kind of rudder, like we're just blown around this way and that way. And there's a way to really kind of tie it all together, but it means we take inventory personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's talk about your book. The title of the book is The Myth Guided Mind. We'll have a link for it in the show notes here. But tell us what the inspiration was on that, and what's the thrust of the teaching there.
Well, you know, the inspiration was probably I needed a COVID project myself, and I saw it. Okay. I had a lot of free time. I mean, I was working more than ever, and I still had a lot of free time.
I get it.
You know, so, and I mean, I did look around because there were lots of people, you know, we got alcohol sales got published and, you know, record numbers and all those kinds of things, home deliveries. And you know, there were good ways and bad ways to get through it. And some people turned to exercise or picked up a hobby or project. People were baking bread like it was going out of style. And that had been something I wasn't getting done. I'd wanted to write a book for about 10 years and it wasn't done. So I literally had a client say to me, you know, oh, you should write a book. And I said, oh no, I haven't written a blog post. And he said, did you just use the word can't? Oh no. Client turned my own medicine back on me.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, that's what it was, but had been cooking around. It is a bit of my personal story. You know, I had some trauma at age 16, and then it kind of opened up my pathway. I started to look into, you know, Star Wars and some of those things that I was interested in. Joseph Campbell was big in that. So that got me interested in learning about mythology, and it put me on the path of being a healer. My first steps were going into psychology, learning about psychotherapy. I certainly needed some. But this was kind of like, okay, I've been a psychotherapist for a couple decades now. I'm actually called to do more. People were coming into my office one at a time. I was doing really good work, but I had to answer my own call. And so the book was, how do I get my message out there? How do I be of service to more people? I mean, I was already working with executives, but it's kind of behind closed doors. And I said,
well, right.
Make this public. Right. It's, I changed it up a bit as a coach, obviously.
Yeah. So what are some of the themes and ideas that you cover in the book?
You know, so one of them, kind of the opening theme is how the mental health system is broken and we really need to do better. It starts by doing better for one another. We can't just wait for a diagnosis to be put on us. I think men in particular, just need to be there for one another. You know, we seem to know it at team sports, and then you get these weird stats, like at age 40, the average man has 0.8 friends. So that's not good enough. I think overall it's a book about hope. It's a book about, you know, getting at this deep story, and it's actually, you know, it's got these rave reviews, which kind of surprised me, but happy about how inspirational it is.
Yeah, good.
So not a how-to book. I gotta write a second book for that, but yeah. This is my origin story, you know.
No, congratulations on that. And you know, getting the reviews and having it resonate with people is, of course, why any of us do that, spend the time. And congratulations on getting your COVID project out of the way.
Thanks a lot.
No, I can relate. A colleague of mine and I did the same thing. We committed. We had always been talking about co-authoring a new book. And COVID window allowed us some time to focus on that and get it done and get it out there. So yeah, there will be good things that happen from the whole COVID lockdown experience, I'm sure. But back to your point in the book here, though, I think it's so important that we invest time and allow ourselves a little bit of a journey to explore those fundamental questions. You know, why am I here? You know, what am I doing and where am I going? You know, that kind of thing is always valuable. And it's bigger than a job title or a job description.
Yeah.
And as I said in the first half of the show, that was my big takeaway doing the career coaching I did in the 08 timeframe. I realized that people were hurting, not specifically because they'd lost their job, but because they had lost their identity, their sense of purpose and their sense of the way forward. They were just really, really, really lost on that journey. So the big thing our organization started doing was really counseling and helping people down that path to reconnect with a, perhaps if you want to call it, a God-given sense of purpose. We certainly did that, and just help people redefine who they were and what they could be in this world, and then plot the course to go find work that supports that.
Which is really rather incredible. I mean, that's a huge service. And again, you know, you can go back a couple decades and men used to die within weeks of retiring.
Yeah.
It was this very same issue of, I am my job. That is my identity. It is who I am. And I mean, God forbid, you know, you get laid off at, you know, 58 or something because you died sooner.
Right. Right.
And, you know, this piece of who am I really? What is this me that, you know, started long before I had work and will continue after is really critical. And, you know, as we were talking about, you know, off, this is an off camera, but previous conversation, like sometimes this is, you know, we talked about values, you know, we talked about, you know, Christianity, and I was raised Catholic, and, you know, is it this place? And he said, well, you know, that's one way, but, you know, in that service, you had people of really every faith. And I live in Toronto and it's very multicultural. This isn't a one size fits all necessarily, but you can see where there are these deep questions that, you know, often religion would have answered for us, and sometimes are just missing now.
Right, right. You know? Well, what we chose to do in that organization, we were officially declared, we were a faith-based organization, but we were non-denominational. So we didn't evangelize a particular belief or sect or culture for that matter. But we did speak in terms of whoever you acknowledge as a higher power, there is a purpose in the whole story, and that's what you need to reconnect with. And, yeah, you know, we didn't judge the basis or the principles or the framework that that comes from, but we encourage people that, were somehow raised that way to reconnect with those roots and find that sense of belonging. And we had one gentleman, it was funny, he said, his phrase was, well, come to Doug's meetings, you're either going to find a job or you're going to get saved, either one. But again, we weren't preaching that way. We were teaching from some biblical principles, but again, we didn't twist anybody's arm one way or the other. And I, by the way, for the record, have a very bifurcated religious experience growing up as a child. I've been an official member of about 9 different denominations over my lifetime. And I mean, sprinkled, baptized, dunked, you know, whatever you want to call it. I've done them all. And and that's another discussion for another day, but there's still something there that I think people need to allow themselves the opportunity to connect with.
I really, really do feel that way as well. And I think, you know, when you get into some of these things about trust and psychological safety in the workplace, and, you know, the capacity to be candid and yet kind. So how do you really have a hard conversation with somebody if you don't know where you stand? And it's tough.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And we're demanded to do exactly that when we're leaders, is say, okay, we're going along. Your work was good. And then, you know, this absolute disaster happened. Now, I don't want to call you a whole bunch of names because that's the old school way of doing it. But I need you to take me through step by step what happened after, you know, C, because it was supposed to be D, and XYZ happened instead. Like, there's a hard conversation, and we have to have those all the time.
Right. Right. And it is the leader that, or the effective leader that is, has the ability to do that, have that tough conversation without losing the employee in the process, and to to get there, to have that tough conversation, takes a lot of preparatory work and a lot of buildup in terms of the employer-employee relationship that I think sadly for many decades has gone unattended. It's just, it's been allowed to happen sort of organically. And the reality is what's been being proven to us in volume now is it doesn't happen organically. It takes effort. It takes the leader being very intentional about how they're going to show up for the people on the team and the kind of environment and culture they build in the team room. So I think a lot of people are having their eyes opened right now about their inefficiency as leaders.
And, you know, we got to be, again, kind of kind to ourselves and say, all right, time to grow.
Yeah.
Right? Like suck it up. But but I got this, because anything worthwhile, you know, is hard.
Yeah.
If it's worth doing, it's going to take some effort.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, Mike, this has been a pleasure, and thank you for sharing today. Tell everybody the best way to get a hold of you if they're interested in hearing more about your work.
Yeah, best way to get a hold of me is on LinkedIn. I think I've given you that link. The website should be up any day. I've got a version 2 website going. That's michaelhines.ca. And, of course, get the book on Amazon, amazon.com, The Myth-Guided Mind.
Okay. And again, folks, all that'll be in the show notes. If you're looking and want those links, you're welcome to jump over there and go visit with Mike. And Mike, any closing thoughts or summaries you want to share?
No, Doug, it was great talking to you, and you know, absolutely an honor. When I saw your blog and some of your previous podcasts, oh, I got to talk to this guy. He's speaking the same language. I'll be preaching to the choir, so it's going to be easy to talk to you all day.
Well, I appreciate that.
No, I hope all your listeners are reading those blogs as well. You know,
it is a blessing. Yeah, it is a blessing, and it's steady growth and is what's happening, and I feel honored by that, and really appreciate the following there. So we're going to wrap this up, folks, let you get offline here, and all I want to say is thank you for listening in, and stay tuned for more episodes in these same links and channels. It's always a pleasure to visit with you, and again, thanks to my guest, Mike Hines. And for now, we're going to sign off and see you next time.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.